I walk a straight line, shackle and chain. Oh, gruesome Gertie is calling my name. There is no mercy in this penitentiary. Just ask the Hill String Gang, Rango the Three.
Hey, everyone, and welcome back to Bloody Angola, a podcast 142 years in the making, the complete story of America's bloodiest prison. I'm Jim Chapman. And y'all, when this is being recorded, Woody is still out of town. So I'm going to be solo today, and I've got a great story to bring you. And this is on an escape. Of course, we've told you many times in the past on Bloody Angola that it's probably one of the most difficult prisons to escape from. And the reason for that is not necessarily the wire that you have to, you know, cross and the guard towers that you have to run past with shotguns pointed at you and authorization to shoot to kill. Primarily, it's because of the size, 18,000 acres in size, and that terrain is rugged. You have the Mississippi River, which is very dangerous to cross, and all those sorts of things. You have the wolf dogs that we've told you about in the past. So it's not a prison that you hear people even attempt to escape from often, but to escape and then get away for a length of time is almost unheard of in Angola. But we're bringing you a story here on an escape where that happened. This individual's name was Joe Williams, and I'm going to jump right into it and tell you it was a hot June day in 1976 in Camp H, and we've told y'all many times that Angola is separated into camps, and this was Camp H, and a large group of prisoners, they were hiding out at the camp, and they were drinking what's known as shroom tea or mushroom tea. But they call it shroom tea around here, and it's basically a liquid that is produced by poisonous mushrooms. And I'm not speaking from experience here, but it will apparently make you hallucinate and do all kinds of crazy things, make you see the spirit horse. It was common for these prisoners in 1976 to partake in mushroom tea, and Joe Williams being amongst them. Now, after drinking the tea, Joe heads over to the chow line. He gets his food, and apparently when you drink this mushroom tea, you kind of lose your appetite, so he wasn't really hungry, but he started getting really paranoid. He started focusing on, you know, basically his condition and in life and how he's been in Angola at that time for over 25 years. And he just kind of lost it in his mind, according to him. And he started thinking about the correctional officers and the harsh treatment they were giving him, and just absolutely goes nuts on the inside. He's not showing any of this on the outside. So he leaves the chow hall and he goes to the maintenance shop. And he goes up to one of his friends and he tells him, "I'm going down to the river right now." So his friend, which was a 23-year-old inmate by the name of Danny Ordner, he says just what you think he would say in this situation: "I'm going with you." Now, Joe had been a trustee for over 17 years at this point. We've told you about trustees. They get more of a run of the prison than anybody else. You, to be a trustee, your good behavior has to be off the charts, pretty much. And with that trustee status, they're not as scrutinized. They're not watched as much. And Joe had that reputation. And so nobody was ever really concerned about him attempting an escape. But this particular day, and a little bit of mushroom tea, and that's just what he did. So Danny goes with Joe, and they leave the camp, and they head towards what's known as Angola's Sugar Lake, which is a fishing lake on Angola's property. And that wasn't even necessarily uncommon. Joe did that a lot. The correctional officers were used to seeing him go to do that. So none of that was really weird. It's about a mile and a half from Camp H. So when Joe strolled out of the camp and Danny was behind him walking with him, it was about 5 o'clock p.m. and he's heading towards that lake. You know, some correctional officers spotted him, but they didn't really think anything about it. The pair even passed some officers, and as they passed him, they said, "Hey, we're heading down to the river." But the officers, they laughed. They thought he was joking around. They're like, "All right, Joe, that's cool." So he walks past them and told them exactly what he was going to do. So Joe had an inmate friend, and he actually had made a homemade piro. And if you're not from Louisiana or you don't know what a piro is, it's a wooden boat that is very, very popular in Cajun country. It's made completely out of wood, I guess would be the way to describe it. And they're small. They can typically fit, you know, a couple of people. But they do real well in the swamps of Louisiana because they can navigate that water really easily. So it was a homemade piro that was in Sugar Lake, and so that's where they went first. And they grabbed that piro, and they actually carried that piro an additional mile and a half to the bank of the Mississippi River. Now, when they put that boat in the water, it was dusk. It was just starting to get dark. Nobody had noticed that Joe was escaping just yet, but they wouldn't notice later on when they started doing counts and he still wasn't back from where they thought he went, which was Sugar Lake. So Ross Maggio, he was the warden at Angola at this time, and he said later on after this incident that the pair had traveled by night down the river and would pull the boat out of the water and carry it along the river's edge during the day. So their plan, they knew that during the day, that's when the waterways would be being searched and you could be seen very easily by the chase team. And they were smart about it. They would only go down that river at night because it would be pitch black, y'all. You couldn't see anything. So that was, and during the day, they would stay along the bank and just kind of carry the boat with them in the brush and things like that, or just on the outskirts of the woods where they could hide if they saw anybody. And Ross Maggio, the warden at that time, also mentioned that it was a miracle that they didn't drown traveling that water way, the Mississippi River, at night like that. Look, the Mississippi River's no joke. Not only do you have problems with, you know, sticks in the water and hazards in the water, things that people dumped in the water likely, but you also have an issue of like undertow and things like that. That river can get choppy in spots, very choppy in spots. So if you can't see it, there's a high chance that you might end up in the water and drown. It was really surprising that didn't happen in their case. They even found the chase team a spot while they were searching for these two individuals that showed evidence that the boat had flipped over in the water and they had a struggle to make it to a sandbar. They probably found some stuff under the water in the river that indicated somebody had tipped over. Now, Ross Maggio, the warden, said that Joe was not a typical escapee, that he knew how to survive in the outdoors, and the chase team knew they had their work cut out for them. Well, Maggio was correct. That chase actually lasted several days, 4 days to be exact, when most inmates that escape from Angola and they activate the chase team, they're caught just in a matter of hours. So, one night during this chase, it was about 3 o'clock a.m., Maggio and the chase team had finally called it a day for all intents and purposes, even though it was the middle of the night, and they were preparing to bed down on the levee. One of the chase team members, a guy by the name of Bobby Olivo, was staring out into the darkness of the Mississippi River, and they had a tugboat out there, and the tugboat flashed its beam just across the water, as those tugboats will do at night, to make sure there's no hazards in the way. And that light hits an empty boat floating in the river, and Bobby Olivo sees this. So Bobby screams out for the chase team, and he says, "Hey, I see a boat in the Mississippi River right now." And the boat was close enough where they could get into the water from the bank and just kind of shimmy their ways over to the boat and pull it to the bank. And sure enough, that was the Piro that they had been looking for. Now, by the next day, the chase had extended all the way to just a couple of miles outside the city limits of Baton Rouge. And Baton Rouge is roughly about 60 miles from Angola. So they had been tracking them almost 60 miles. That's crazy, y'all. So on the banks of the river, chase team member Major Bert Dixon was standing on the west bank of that river. And again, that's just a few miles outside of Baton Rouge by this point. And he spots both fugitives on the east bank of the river. And it looked like they were celebrating. They were like splashing in the water, high-fiving each other, all this stuff. They hadn't even noticed the chase team close by, and they thought they had made it. They figured if they made it to Baton Rouge, that the chase team would start backtracking, not believing they could have made it that far. So Major Dixon, he radios for a boat, and it comes up, and he and some other chase team members take off after the pair of convicts. Now, during this time, the warden, Maggio, was on site, and he radioed also for a boat, but it hadn't arrived yet. He was waiting for that boat. The two convicts see the first boat coming, and they take off running. Now, it's important to note, the chase team had orders to shoot to kill. I mean, these are escaped murderers, right? So if you see them, shoot them to kill them. And while they were firing at these inmates as they started running, you know, they give them the "get down, we see you, get down on the ground." If they take off running, they have every right to shoot to kill. Both of those inmates run into the woods that surround the river, literally with bullets flying past their head. Now, Maggio, the warden, he's still on that bank, and he's getting frustrated. He wants to get into the chase, right? So he tells his deputy warden, get in the truck. They jump in the truck, and they speed off towards the Mississippi River Bridge. The Mississippi River Bridge was the only place where you could cross and get to that east side of the Mississippi River without having a boat. So they cross, and they get to the east side of the river. And when they get to the other side, they head out on foot. They get out the truck. They just take off running in the direction of where they thought the pair was headed, and hoping they would head them off. And that's exactly what happened. They run right into both fugitives, and they were squatted down, and they were hiding in some bushes. Now, Maggio recalled later that the first thing that Joe said to him as he stepped out of the bushes was, get this, "Hey, boss, do you have my heart pills? I think I'm about to have a heart attack." I bet he was. And Ward Maggio actually told him, or responded to him, and said, "Joe, You've been running for 4 days. If you ain't had a heart attack by now, you ain't going to have a heart attack. And just amazing that they had gotten away for 4 days with the chase team behind them, but they did eventually catch them. So they get caught and they get, of course, brought back to Angola, and now they've got escape charges, and that's a whole different deal, and we'll kind of get into that. But you may wonder, what did Joe Williams do to end up in the bloodiest prison in America? Well, Joe was from one of Louisiana's oldest parishes, and it's known as Lafourche Parish. And Lafourche is Cajun French for fork. And the parish actually got its name because of a fork in the Mississippi River that runs the length of that parish. It's also, interestingly enough, known as having the longest line village in Louisiana. Y'all, Lafourche Parish has 65 miles of farms and houses that run in almost a straight line fronting Bayou Lafourche. Just a beautiful when you look at it. Now, Joe Williams, he was born in Madisonville, Louisiana in 1926, but he was actually raised in Golden Meadow. And Golden Meadow is a very popular still to this day, fishing community in Lafourche Parish. You can fish for speckled trout and things like that in Golden Meadow, and it actually will lead you out into the Gulf of Mexico. There's a lot of brackish water there. Just a really good spot for fishing, even to this day. Now, that area of Louisiana at that time was almost completely comprised of Indian tribes. There were various Indian tribes in that area. And Williams, he was actually born half Indian and half Cajun French. And, you know, when you're of mixed blood at that time, it was very common to get ostracized, and he was ostracized a lot as a young man and looked down on for his mixed heritage. And it was a confrontation over this very thing that led him to Angola, according to Joe. He said that he was called a racial slur at a bar, and when he commenced to fighting the man who called him the racial slur, the man picked up a beer bottle, broke it, and swung it at Joe. And Joe was packing a knife, and he actually pulled the knife out and stabbed the man 7 times. Now, the man lived, but Joe received a 5-year sentence for aggravated battery. And I would imagine you may be saying, well, he stabbed the guy 7 times. That should be attempted murder. And I wouldn't necessarily disagree with you. I would imagine in this case, there was no dispute that the guy broke the beer bottle and was trying to kill Joe. So there's an argument there, and it will come into play later on. So remember this, there's an argument there that Joe was defending himself and that he stabbed the guy in self-defense. Now, he stabbed the guy 7 times. That's a lot of self-defense, but I don't know the situation. Maybe he was stabbing the guy and the guy kept coming. The man did live, though. He goes to Angola for that 5-year sentence. At that time, it was 1946 and he was 19. So in 1949, he actually got paroled. So he served 3 years of that 5-year sentence. And that kind of tells me that having only served 3 years, he probably had a lot of good behavior time, almost a day for a day at that point. And so they released him early. So he must have been a model prisoner at Angola during that sentence. So he gets out. He goes back to Golden Meadow, and he meets a girl. And this girl was half Cajun and half Spanish. And so they had some things in common with being ostracized and things like that. And they fall in love. They get married. And in short order, they have 2 kids. I mean, it was like 9 months, she has a kid. 9 months later, she has another kid. And she actually gets pregnant for a 3rd kid before they were even married 3 years. So Joe's, in his mind, he has a lot of pressure on him, and he decides he's going to commit a burglary of a home. He becomes desperate for money, and during this middle-of-the-night burglary, a woman wakes up. She catches him in the act. He claims he panicked, and he ends up killing her. And sure enough, he's back to Angola. The issue this time is he got a life sentence, not only for the murder, but also the fact that he was on parole at the time he committed this murder. So he arrives in Angola for that second stint on May 7th of 1951. And this is just 3 months, y'all, after the Heelstring Gang fiasco in Angola. So if you haven't heard that episode, go way back to season one. I think it's the fourth or fifth episode on season one. Heck, it might even be earlier than that. But the situation where the inmates were protesting the just awful conditions in Angola during that time, and they cut their own Achilles tendons in protest and to bring awareness of that horrible treatment, that was just 3 months before he got there. So that tells you how crazy Angola was during that time. So he arrives at Angola, and it was pretty rough, as you would expect when he got there. It was definitely the bloody years. He got beaten often. He got in fights with everybody from, you know, correctional officers to inmates, you name it. But he survived, and he actually worked out in the cane fields without complaint, you know, and it looks tough, man. It's Louisiana. You're cutting cane, one of the hardest things you would ever have to do. Middle of the summertime, you're talking about 100 degree plus weather, and you're out in the sun all day. This is back in the time where they didn't care if you fell out in the field and died, right? So he doesn't complain at all. He's out there. He's just doing the work he's expected to do. And the Angola and the correctional officers there, they take note of this, and they kind of reward him in their mind for this. And a year later, he was made a convict guard. And we told you about convict guards in the past. They are essentially correctional officers, but they're convicts, and they have shotguns, and they sit on a bluff, for example, and they're looking over the field as these guys are working, and they have just as much authority as the correction officers to shoot to kill. The great thing about being a convict guard was you got out of work. Basically, you could sit on a 5-gallon bucket all day and just watch prisoners. You know, these convict guards, they also worked the cell blocks. So they were the bosses without actually being the bosses, right? The problem with convict guards is they were also looked at, if you were a black convict guard, the other black prisoners would accuse you of being an Uncle Tom and a rat and all those sorts of things. And they would try to humiliate you for this if they could get away with it. And Joe, he kind of had some difficulty dealing with this. So 2 months later, he goes to the correction officers and he said he wanted to quit the job. The problem with that was the guards in Angola, they didn't have enough. So him quitting the job throws the correctional officers in a bind. It throws the administration in a bind. So he actually got punished for quitting that job. And his punishment for quitting was he was sent to the Red Hat cell block and was actually confined to solitary for 8 days. And after those 8 days, he got sent back into the fields. And he actually cut cane for another 4 years. And at that point, he was sent to the cotton fields. And he had said later on in life that he found that slightly easier than cutting cane. So he preferred the cotton fields over the cane fields. Now, all told, he spent 10 years working in the fields. Now, Joe became what you would consider a model prisoner at Angola. And eventually, it was his escape attempt that kept him from receiving any type of clemency. He had filed for clemency several times, and had gotten denied by the parole board because of that escape attempt. When you try to escape, whether you're drinking shroom tea or not, it's going to make it real difficult for you to ever get clemency or anything like that or considerations for release. But that would all change in the mid-80s. They started looking at his case and they found some issues with it. Not saying he didn't do it, but they found some issues in the way in which he was prosecuted. And they were really working through all that. And during that process, he actually applied for clemency again. And look, this guy had a spotless, outside of the escape attempt, he had like a spotless record at Angola and was considered a hard worker. And he was well liked by the wardens and the correctional officers and things like that. And on May 14th of 1986, then Governor Edwin Edwards signed a clemency form that actually commuted Joe Williams' sentence to time served, and he was released from Angola. This was 35 years after he arrived for that second stint. And that, y'all, is the story of Joe Williams. And I thought that was pretty cool when I was reading it. It's rare, y'all, that you find escape information. They don't want that out there. You know, obviously the Angola, any penitentiary doesn't want escape articles written and things like that, because it may contain information on how other prisoners can escape. And plus it's, you know, you never want anyone to escape from your prison. It doesn't put you in the best light when they do. But in this case, that's what happened. I thought that was a pretty amazing story. I hope you enjoyed it. Just a couple of other things that I want to make you aware of. And look, when there's news out there concerning Angola that's current news, we like to kind of report on that. So there was a press release recently that 13 members of a drug trafficking conspiracy involving Louisiana State Penitentiary inmates and former Angola guards have been sentenced to federal prison. I want to read you that. United States Attorney Ronald Gaith announced the sentencing of 13 individuals by Chief Judge Shelley Dick in connection with an extensive federal, state, and local investigation aimed at a large-scale cocaine, heroin, marijuana, and methamphetamine trafficking network based in Louisiana State Penitentiary in Angola, with suppliers in East Baton Rouge Parish in Colton, California. So Michael Augustine, who was 44 of Erath, Louisiana, was sentenced to 51 months of prison following his conviction. Arthur Badsadua, who was 44 of Angola, Louisiana, was sentenced to 192 months of imprisonment. And it doesn't list, just real quick, I'm going to go through their names. It doesn't list who was a guard and who wasn't. If it says Angola, Louisiana, it was either a correctional officer or an inmate. I can tell you that. Manuel Cadena, 44, of Hesperia, California, was sentenced to 48 months in prison. Michael Cadena, 33, also of California, was sentenced to 48 months of prison. Jeffrey Day, 38 years old, was sentenced to 57 months in prison. DeAnthony Ford, 37, of Angola, Louisiana, 151 months in prison. Joshua Gonzalez, 40, of Angola, was sentenced to 72 months. Jared Graham, 34, of Angola, was sentenced to 126 months. Xavier Johnson, of Baton Rouge, he was 39, was sentenced to 80 months in prison. Dudley Melanson, 35, of Angola, was sentenced to 72 months of prison. Ishmael Ocha, 37, of California, 90 months in prison. Kevin Narcisse, 38, of Angola, 60 months in prison. Nelson Tippin, 44, of Angola, 48 months in prison. So those sentencing stipulations were just handed out by the judge, and those guys are all going to prison. So you wonder, And we get asked a lot how these drugs get into prison. Well, there you go. They just busted a whole network of them, and I believe more to come on that. And I found, while I was digging for this, I actually came up with another interesting article. I'm just going to read you real quick. It's not long. But it talks about a Washington Parish jail and a smuggling scheme of contraband that I found interesting. And they issued arrest warrants in this situation. And this just occurred. And I'm going to read you the article. This is out of Franklin, Louisiana. A Louisiana convicted murderer, a fellow inmate, and three accomplices have been implicated in schemes to smuggle contraband, narcotics, and a cell phone into the Washington Parish jail. The sheriff's office in Washington Parish has obtained arrest warrants for the five individuals after an intercepted package and monitored conversations revealed the smuggling conspiracy. Trayvon Washington was convicted March 1st of murdering 23-year-old Zyke Barker and was the intended recipient of one package that jail guards intercepted. The 22-year-old Hammond man received a mandatory lifetime prison sentence for that murder on April 8th, so just recently, and he has yet to be transferred to Louisiana State Penitentiary in Angola, and he's already getting in a shit pile of trouble. According to the sheriff's office, a woman identified as Mercedes Watkins brought a package into the jail intended for Washington earlier in the month. Guards, suspicious of its contents, found it contained four bags of Doritos, three of which concealed bags of marijuana, and it was 1.7 ounces total of marijuana. The package also contained three jars of peanut butter in which a flip-style cell phone, as well as some drug tablets, hydrocodone actually, and smoking tobacco had been hidden inside the peanut butter. Man, they will think anything. The agency said a meticulous review of communications between Washington and Watkins uncovered multiple instances of discussions regarding the introduction of contraband into the jail. They said an arrest warrant has been issued for Watkins and the introduction of contraband into a penal facility is the charge, as well as illegal distribution of a controlled substance. The sheriff's office said during its interview of communications, similar conversations were also observed between an inmate named Kiana Jackson and accomplices Duran Smith and Rayburn Harvin during a jail smuggling plan. The agency said warrants have been issued for those three and Washington, of course, regarding their involvement. Jackson, 23, saw his bond increase to $160,000 as he awaits trial on charges of being a felon in possession of a firearm. So there's many ways in which they smuggle things into these prisons. And maybe we'll bring you a story soon on just specifically on some instances of things being smuggled into Angola. I think that would be interesting. Look, we want to thank, and I mean really want to thank, all our patrons right now more than ever. I want all of y'all to get ready because we are about to apply a ton of focus on our patron page. You'll get more bonus content than ever before. You know, we're also considering instituting some new perks for our members. If you are a member of our warden team, I got some stuff coming out for you. We've had some issues lately with some things that we had ordered to send specifically our quarterly gifts to our highest tier patrons, which is our warden team members. You have to be a warden team member to receive these now. There's certain tiers, and it's that highest tier that gets those quarterly gifts. But I promise you, I'm about to start sending some out. Thank God I've got all these issues with some suppliers out of the way. Now, to our patrons, plain and simple, were it not for you, you wouldn't be hearing this episode right now. I cannot stress that enough. Woody and I absolutely love each and every one of you. You mean the world to us. And right now, more than ever, we need you. And we're going to bring you the best content you've ever heard in your life. I promise you. But we can't thank you enough for your support. You're why we exist, and we are forever grateful. So thank you so much. And I promise you, Woody is going to be back on the next episode. This was just recorded before he was back in town. So until next time, I'm Jim Chapman for Woody Everton. We're your host of Bloody Angola, a podcast 142 years in the making, the complete story of America's bloodiest prison. Peace.
I walk a straight line, shackled and chained. Some Gertie is calling my name. There is no mercy in this penitentiary. Just ask the Hill String Gang, Rango.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.